It is the Osmo NBA Strategy Show, sponsored by Prize Picks, and Thursday morning. So I'm here joined by Adam, filling in for who usually is it Josh who usually does the strategy show now?
Yeah.
All right. So Josh unavailable on Thursdays because apparently he needs time off on occasion from doing his his super early process show that does like 5 a.m. So I've been doing this on Thursdays. Always happy to chop up some NBA with Adam. And got an interesting slate. Thursdays usually smaller, but 5 games today, which relative to Thursdays, more than like the 2 or 3 games we get sometimes. Any kind of just general big picture views you have on the slate, Adam?
Not really. I mean, in general, I guess on shorter slates, typically there's just going to be a little bit less value, but no, nothing really specific to this one.
Yeah, and lots of guys on the injury report. Current guys listed as questionable before we get into breaking these games down. Norman Powell, he is questionable. Gary Trent is questionable. RJ Barrett is questionable. Kyle Anderson is questionable. Mike Muscala, who gives a shit, but he's questionable as well. Key players that are going to be out today, Ja Morant, he remains out. Damian Lillard is out. So those are really, and then the Raptors news with OG Anunoby out. So those are really the core players who are going to be out today. That's where a lot of the value is going to be coming from. But let's start by talking about a team that has everybody healthy right now. And that is, well, not quite everybody. Kobe White is out for the Chicago Bulls, but not something that's going to have too much of a massive impact. But the big thing here, Zach LaVine, he's healthy and back with the team. And Nikola Vucevic, he finally doesn't suck anymore. Started to make a little bit more of his shots recently. It was a really rough go for him to start the year. I do think that he's going to pick it up going forward. But just a quick thing I want to ask you, Adam, about Vucevic, because I don't think the Bulls, as just from a points per dollar sense, offer the best value on the slate. But now that we've seen Vucevic play a little bit better, do you think he's worth stabs at low ownership today?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought that he was anyway, just because we have such a long track record of what Vuce is as a player. Even when he had, 20-21% usage rate and LaVine and DeRozan were dominating there, you still know that there's going to be games where he shows up and he has, big games. So as long as he's at low ownership, I think it's fine. The salary is rising pretty quickly, though. Like, it's kind of difficult to say that. It's hard to explain why Vuce is more expensive than LaVine or DeRozan when he's at the most premium position as well. So that makes it tough. But yeah, anytime you can get to someone of Vuce's talent level at low ownership, it's appealing. And I mean, that goes for LaVine and DeRozan as well.
Yeah. And then LaVine and DeRozan, they're both going to be a little bit more popular than Vucevic. We got both of them projected for double digit ownership, and both of them, I just find to be a little bit too expensive. At least with Vucevic, he's overpriced, but he's also really low owned. I don't know on a 5-game slate that I'm dying to play DeMar DeRozan at 9,000 or Zach LaVine at 8,800 when I have both of them projected for just under 40 fantasy points. So you look at this Bulls team as a whole, is there anything that really stands out to you? Because to me, it's everybody's a little bit overpriced.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I see it as well. LaVine and DeRozan, I understand why they're getting more ownership than Vuce, since they are a little bit cheaper and they're at positions that the opportunity cost isn't quite as high. But I would say I think the ownership's about where it should be. I don't think you're getting any crazy advantage by getting over the field on those guys at that price tag. Vuce, like you said, more difficult to get to. That's reflected in the ownership. Lonzo Ball, kind of the same thing at 6%. He's going to have some big games, but it's kind of few and far between because obviously he's fourth in the pecking order behind those other three. So it kind of just looks like a tournament team to me, where I don't think that the pricing really stands out at all. They're all pretty expensive, but we know that just the talent level here makes them viable in tournaments still.
Yeah, and then as for Kobe White is going to be out today, he's been out for a lot of the season. He came back, he started to pick up more minutes, but it's not like he's playing a whole bunch as of late. The last few games, 22, 20, 24 minutes. There's no individual value play that really opens up for me with Kobe White being out. Is it any different for you?
No, the only value piece I would point out, and it doesn't really have anything to do with Kobe White, but Javonte Green's been playing more minutes lately. He played 35.9 minutes last game. He's not a very good per minute fantasy guy, but anytime you have someone in the low 3K range playing that many minutes, he's at least worth consideration. That being said, he's also projected for about 10% ownership here. And whenever you have someone that averages 0.7 DraftKings points per minute getting any semblance of ownership, you can always find alternatives as well.
Yeah, so Bulls, I think we started with one of my least favorite teams to roster on the entire slate. A lot of expensive pricing there. I don't think there's too much to like that. And Vucevic, the usage has picked up 23% or higher in 3 of the last 4 games. And he's actually started to knock down shots. That's going to take away some production from those other stars on the Chicago Bulls. Now, moving over to the Knicks part of the game, I think the one thing we really have to, well, a couple of things we have to point out. Number one, Kemba Walker not in the rotation anymore. That is known information by everybody at this point. And then also we've got RJ Barrett, who's questionable to play with an illness. Now, RJ Barrett was able to play last game, even though he was originally listed as questionable with an illness, but he wasn't able to finish the game. He ended up coming out early, and then we saw guys like Alec Burks had a big game. Derrick Rose had a big game. So let's start assuming that RJ Barrett is not able to play. Who would be the guys that stand out to you the most from the Knicks?
So I think that you would still, you know, obviously guys like Burks and Rose would still look good, but it would open up more minutes potentially. For one, it would solidify, you know, those guys' minutes. You got 39 minutes from Burks last game. If Barrett were playing, I don't necessarily think he plays that many minutes. I still think he was going to play like 36. Evan Fournier could play more, but like we didn't even see that happen last game. We saw a ton of run for Emmanuel quickly, which obviously it could happen again. It doesn't have to. So I think one thing would be that you're likely to see more minutes for either Quickly or Fournier. It could also, you know, sort of be split where like they both play 30 instead of one of them playing 38 and one playing 22. But I think that's where the biggest benefits would be in terms of playing time, because like I think Derrick Rose is still going to get his, maybe not 35 minutes, but I think that, you know, he's still likely to play enough minutes to be valuable. I think Alec Burks is still going to play a lot, but that Fournier Quickly split, I think, is where a lot of those minutes went.
Yeah. So for me, I'd be most interested in Quickly. And, you know, this could always change very early in the day. We've got a lot more news to come out, injuries and ownership updates and whatnot. But at least as of now, we have Burks projected for 15% ownership. We have Rose projected for 15% ownership. Quickly's only projected for 4% ownership. Now, if Barrett was to be ruled out, all those numbers would go up. But I still assume that Rose and Burks would be more popular than Quickly just based on the current ownership. And given all those minutes that Quickly played last game, 38 minutes, that's a massive workload. And I think Quickly is really good. And he hasn't had the best shooting start to the season, but it's looked better over the last couple of weeks. And I think if I could get Quickly to a third of the ownership of guys like Rose and Burks, I think Quickly would be the way that I'm looking to go to there. Now, if RJ Barrett is in, how would that change the outlook of the Knicks for you?
So I think it would make Quickly and Fournier, neither one look nearly as appealing. I'm still not too concerned about the impact on Rose and Burks. You know, like, again, I don't think Rose plays 35 minutes again, necessarily. I don't think Burks plays 39, but my assumption going into that last game was that you were going to get Burks essentially backing up RJ Barrett or Fournier, one of the two, and playing a bunch of minutes alongside Derrick Rose. That's the rotation they were going with even before Barrett's injury. So I'm pretty confident that at least when they're playing well, and they have for most of the season when they've been together, you're going to get more run for Derrick Rose now with Kemba out of the rotation, because you're going to get him playing alongside Burks, whereas he was not playing alongside Kemba. And then similarly, you're going to get more run for Burks because he's going to be playing two positions now. So I still think both of those guys look good, even if Barrett's in. 4,800 for Rose, I think, is still too cheap. 6,500 for Burks is getting pretty close to where it should be. But I think they would still look good. I think the big negative would be Quickly and Fournier, I think, would be the most negatively impacted by Barrett's playing time.
All right, and then moving into the front court, we've got guys, you know, like Randall, Mitchell Robinson, Nerlens Noel, pretty thin Knicks front court. But even so, outside of some shares of Julius Randall in the initial build that I've made, I'm not really getting too much of the Knicks front court, and I'm not that much different than the field on Julius Randall. We haven't projected 14% ownership. The build I did this morning with my initial projections got to Randall at 16%. So is there anything that really stands out to you in the front court here?
No, not really. I think it goes without saying that $9,500 Julius Randle is fine. You know, he can certainly have success there. You are seeing, or you could potentially see, some more playmaking from him as well, with Burks being the point guard. You know, not a knock on Burks, just, you know, not necessarily quite as ball dominant as somebody like Kemba would, you know, have to be. So you could see an uptick for Randle there, but I think it's still just sort of a price tag that is more or less correct. I think the ownership is more or less correct as well.
All right, next game on the slate, we have the Milwaukee Bucks on the road playing in Toronto. And let's start by talking about Giannis, because he is the number one pay-up option on the slate if you have the salary cap to get up to him. Here's the issue. there isn't that much value available to us on this five-game slate as of now. So I found it really hard to get to Giannis in my initial build, even though I haven't projected almost the same as I did yesterday, where I saw Giannis as a guy who, hey, I had him projected, if I remember correctly, for like 57 fantasy points yesterday, which you wouldn't think at a 12,100 price tag would mean that he ends up in a lot of lineups. But he still ended up in a lot of my lineups yesterday just because there was so much value on the slate that it was easy to get to him. I haven't projected about the same today, a little bit lower, but I'm finding it difficult to get to him just because there isn't the value available. So how are you viewing Giannis on this slate? He's projected for 18% ownership, and I'm coming underneath there just because I find it difficult to get to him.
That's how I see it as well. It has nothing really to do with Giannis. It's more so, like you were saying, for one, if there's a lack of value, then, you know, obviously you're making bigger sacrifices to get to him. But the other issue is that if there's a lack of value, and also just this is, you know, a function of it being a shorter slate, there's just less possible value options you can use. You're going to end up also on similar builds to everyone else that gets to Giannis. You know, like I think, for example, we talked about Javante Green playing a lot of minutes, but also being 10% owned. Giannis is a big reason why he's 10% owned. And I guess to put it a different way, a very large percentage of those Javante Green lineups are going to also have Giannis. So you're going to be sort of overlapping quite a bit. So it's not, I'm not saying I'm, you know, actively looking to get away from Giannis or anything like that. I will gladly play however much I get and be really, really happy about it, because I think he is the best payup option on the slate. But you do have a lot of mid-range options that are solid here. You don't have a lot of really good value. And that's kind of been the story of a lot of this season, at least on DraftKings, is that in previous years, they used to kind of chop $1,000 off the guys at the top, and the mid-range guys were really, really sharply priced. Now they are fully pricing the guys at the top, and there's actually some mid-range value. So that's one thing where I don't think people have really adjusted that well this year. I think people are still building lineups like they always have, where they throw in some $3,300 guy and then pay up for the top option, even though they're paying the correct price essentially for the top option and not really creating any value for themselves. So I think that, you know, obviously haven't built lineups yet, but I'll be happy with whatever Giannis I get to, but it does seem like it's a slate where it's going to be pretty difficult to get to him for a couple of different reasons.
Yeah, and that's on DraftKings. FanDuel's a little bit easier. He's only 11,000 on FanDuel, and then also the salary's a little bit less restrictive. So 11,000 on FanDuel, I have no issue getting to Giannis, but DK, I'm finding it really difficult in the initial builds I'm making. Now, obviously, if we get a situation where all of a sudden the key player's ruled out from a game and then a bunch of value opens up on the slate, it's going to be a lot easier to get to Giannis, but not the case for me as of now. As for other guys on the team, Jrue Holiday, Chris Middleton, Bobby Portis, there's nothing else I really like here. It's kind of, for me, if I have the space to get to Giannis, so be it. If not, there's nobody else that really stands out here.
I kind of like the mid-range pricing on Milwaukee a little bit. They came up a little from yesterday, but like if you're going a little bit more balanced, getting to a $7,100 Portis, $7,400 Drew, even a $7,200 Middleton, I think looks reasonable. Grayson Allen at $4,500 doesn't look bad to me either. He's still likely to play around 30 minutes. So we saw Cousins join the rotation yesterday. He played 15 minutes. You got 26 from Portis, which is less than you were getting. But I don't necessarily think that was all because of Cousins. They closed with a small lineup. They closed with Giannis, Middleton, Holiday, Allen, and Connaughton. I don't think Connaughton is always in the closing lineup. And if you had gotten Portis in there, that's still another 4 to 5 minutes. So not guys that I'd be building around in cash, but if you are going a little bit more balanced, I do like getting to these guys because you have a 110 total on Milwaukee. So, you know, it's a team that's likely to score a lot of points. And if you don't have Giannis, one of the easiest ways for him not to have a massive game is for somebody like Portis, Holiday, or Middleton to step up.
Yeah. If anybody gets to him, I wouldn't have a massive issue with it. Just not overall my favorite plays on the slate. But then also we have to see what kind of value is going to open up later in the day. And that's something that could change it. But at least as of right now, my initial build did not have too many of the players from Milwaukee in the mid range. Now moving over to Toronto, we have Gary Trent Jr. listed as questionable. OG Anunoby is out. Ken Birch is out. So certainly potential for a lot of value on the Toronto Raptors. We've seen the situation pop up a little bit in recent games. It seems like actually over the last year and a half, there's constantly somebody who's out for the Toronto Raptors. First, I want to ask you, if Gary Trent Jr. is out, how are you going to view Svi Mykhailiuk? Because he was a chalk play the last time we saw this situation. He started, he appeared in line for a big role, big minutes, and it just wasn't there. He didn't make his shots early. He only ended up playing 17 minutes, got taken off the court early. What do you expect we would see from Svi's minutes if Trent misses again?
I think a lot of it's just really dependent on how the game is going and how he's playing, which in situations like that, my interest level ends up being heavily dependent on what the field is projected to do. Last slate, I barely had any because we had him. I don't know what we had him projected at. I know he came in at like 48% owned, but like the slate before that, I had a ton because it was a slate. It was a shorter slate, but he was like 20% owned. And I think it was Tyus Jones was like the other value option who was like 40%. So in a situation like that, I just played a bunch of C because I didn't really feel strongly one way or the other about how he was going to do. So this is a spot where if we're projecting people to shy away from him, you know, if Gary Trent's out and he's starting and we're projecting people to shy away because of last game, there's still a path to a bunch of minutes. You know, two games ago, he played 38 minutes. He was playing well. He can still get those minutes or at least close to it if he's playing well. So if he's low owned, I like taking my chances there. If he's popular, there's just a bigger edge to saying, okay, well, I hope he plays poorly again. And a huge percentage of the field either gets 17 minutes or at least gets, you know, a poor shooting performance. So it's just a really volatile player, both in terms of production and in terms of playing time. In general, I just want to do the opposite of whatever the field's projected to do.
Yeah. And it's going to be so difficult to predict these minutes because it was basically the game against Boston was almost the same situation as the game against Memphis in terms of guys that were out. And Svi played 38 minutes against Boston, like you said, and then it was 18 minutes was his final playing time against Memphis. So in terms of actually projecting his minutes, it's going to be really difficult. There's a wide range of outcomes there. So I think it is wise to look and see, what is the field going to do? Is he going to be a contrarian play because everybody feels burned by last game? Then give me Svi. Is it going to be a situation where everybody goes, hey, there's no way that happens again, I want to play Svi? Then yeah, I would want to be underweight to him. So it's going to depend what the field does. But also, how would Gary Trent Jr. being out impact the other guys on this roster? So players like Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, Scotty Barnes, they would all appear to be in situations where they have to play bigger minutes with bigger roles on offense. But which of them would stand out to you the most if there is no Gary Trent Jr. in addition to no Anunoby?
Yeah, I mean, I don't view it as like a huge upgrade for them just because they play a ton of minutes anyway, and Trent's not a particularly high usage guy. But it does help to solidify minutes for Barnes, Siakam, VanVleet. You know, I would expect that you're going to get around 40 minutes from VanVleet again. Scotty Barnes would likely play around 38 minutes again. And then Siakam probably plays 36 to 38 as well. He only played 32 minutes last game, but that was foul trouble. He picked up his fourth foul pretty early in the third. Then he picked up his fifth at the end of the third. So he was just a little bit limited in that game. I would expect his playing time to go up. So I think they look good, or they look fine, you know, even if Trent is in. But if Trent's out, it just makes those minutes even a little bit more secure, I think.
All right, guys, today's show is sponsored by Prize Picks. If you are not familiar with Prize Picks, head on over to the site, make your first deposit using the promo code Osmo, get to a $100 bonus on your first deposit. Also, over at osmo.com, we have something called Odd Shopper. I'm sure you guys have heard us talk about it on shows, but it is something you guys really should be looking at because, number one, it's a free tool. You can find all the best ROI bets and bets that have the best percentage of winning based on our projections. Same information that goes into our NBA DFS projections go into our projections for prop bets as well. So that's free to check out. You can see what some of the best prop books, prop bets on the board are at books near you. And the other thing also, as you're playing on Prize Picks, you can just compare some of the projections we have over on Odd Shopper to Prize Picks. You go over to Odd Shopper and you can see right now we have under 7.5 points for Killian Hayes. That's a bet that is 46% expected ROI, 78% win rate. So you could look at something like that, compare that to the odds over at Prize Picks and pick out some props that way. So that's a good way, I think, to build a bankroll up over on Prize Picks using our projection. And of course, using that promo code Osmo to get up to $100 bonus on your first deposit. All right, moving on to the next. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I just had one minor thing to mention. I actually hadn't seen it come up in chat, which was surprising. But Chris Boucher was only in the rotation last game because of Siakam's foul trouble. So if you're someone that insists that Chris Boucher is great and that you should be playing him, still wasn't in the rotation last game.
Yeah, and so the other issue with Chris Boucher, too, is he a good fantasy producer? Yes. Do we think he's going to crush if he gets on the court? Yes, probably. But you know who doesn't like him? Nick Nurse. And yeah, that matters a lot more than anything else because Nick Nurse would do anything to not play Chris Boucher big minutes. So 7 minutes for Chris Boucher last game, 38% usage rate in those minutes. 2 games ago was a DNP coach's decision. So Chris Boucher. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll say kind of related to that because I'd forgotten to mention it. But Precious Achiuwa at 4,600 obviously let down a huge percentage of the field last game, but kind of similar to Svi, not in the sense that his playing time is super volatile, but if he's going to be really popular again, then I'm still okay going elsewhere. But if assuming the ownership comes down a little bit, at least he was still playing big minutes last game. He fouled out. He played really poorly, but he still looks like a good value at 4,600.
Yeah, and so that's also something else talking about Chris Boucher's minutes. Precious got into foul trouble, ended up fouling out. That was so it was twofold. Pascal Siakam was in foul trouble. Precious Achiuwa fouled out. So that was what it took for Chris Boucher to play 7 minutes last game. He's not going to be a viable option for me on this slate. By the way, if you guys haven't done it yet, do us a favor. Like this video. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. It's the holiday season, and we would appreciate your support. And it costs nothing to you. It's a click of the button. Two clicks of the button, actually. One click on the like, one click on the subscribe. Helps us out a whole ton. All right, next game we have here, the Oklahoma City Thunder on the road against the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, starting on the OKC side of the game, Josh Giddey, he remains out because of an illness. We saw with him out yesterday, Lu Dort ended up picking up a pretty big role in the offense. We saw a big fantasy production of Lu Dort, scored over 30 fantasy points. Trey Mann ended up starting. I was very high on Trey Mann yesterday. It did not go particularly well. He started, he played 32 minutes, did nothing with those minutes, had a 22% usage rate, but there was no peripheral stats, two rebounds, no assists, no steals, no blocks. Were you on Trey Mann yesterday, and are you going to be looking to go back to him today with Giddey out again?
I was around the field on him yesterday, and yeah, I'll go right back to him. I mean, it's just, he's really, really cheap. And so, you know, the fact that he played 32 minutes in that game is really appealing. His rates with Gildas Alexander this year are awful. Granted, a lot of that came from yesterday, but he's played a total of 90 minutes alongside Shea. He has averaged 0.54 DraftKings points per minute with a 16.8% usage rate and virtually no peripherals. So it's not that he is particularly safe or anything, but assuming he's in the starting lineup and going to play that many minutes, he is someone that, you know, at least does have some talent. He can produce fantasy points, even though he hasn't in this situation yet. The only, you know, kind of concern I have is that he is projected for 25% ownership, but at the same time, on a 5-game slate, that's not even that high. So as long as the ownership doesn't get too out of control, I'd be fine going to Mann.
Yeah, and let's see. What is the current ownership that we have on him? 25%. That's reasonable to me. In my initial build, I have him, I think, a little bit overweight to that. So the build I have right now, I have Trey Mann, 27.5%. So a little bit overweight to the field, but not significantly different. I do think he should have a better result this time out than he had yesterday. As for other guys on the roster, I get that Lu Dort was good yesterday. I find it very difficult to wrap my head around playing a lot of Lu Dort, and maybe I need to maybe it's just, you know, prior biases I have on Lu Dort, and I think he's been shooting a little bit over his head, but I just don't think there's all that massive upside on Lu Dort as long as he's priced kind of in this mid 5K range. Do you see Dort any differently?
Maybe a little, but I mean, I think I generally agree with what you're saying. The issue I have with Dort, so I like him. You know, the minutes are nice. He's reasonably priced. The issue I have, so overall this year, he's a 0.85 DraftKings points per minute guy, which if he's going to play 34 to 36 minutes on average, that's fine. The problem is that he's got about a 21.5% usage rate when Gildas Alexander, or for the season, and he's, you know, around 20.5% when Gildas Alexander is on the floor. When Gildas Alexander isn't on the floor, he's got like a 25% usage rate, so you're getting some more looks, but he doesn't do a whole lot in terms of rebounding. He doesn't do much in the way of assists. So essentially, when Gildas Alexander is playing, you just have a scoring dependent guy that has a 20% usage rate. That's just, and gets some ownership. That's just like a weird spot to get to. You know, I think that he still projects as a decent value just because of how many minutes he's likely to play. But when he's popular, I typically just go elsewhere, except for when Gildas Alexander is out.
Yeah, and then at the high end, looking at SGA, somebody else who I've not really rostered very much of SGA as of late, and I really like him as a player, had a solid fantasy game yesterday for his price point in particular. Obviously wouldn't have had an issue with 48.8 DraftKings points out of him at the mid 8K price range, but there just hasn't been that much upside on SGA either this year. He has one game of over 50 fantasy points. That came all the way back on October 24th. So I view SGA as a fairly high floor play, but I don't know that he has the ceiling to really break any kind of GPPs. So SGA is somebody else who I don't really think I'm going to be getting to. Something else to talk about with Memphis, Ja Morant being out is a tremendous downgrade to their offense, but it kind of helps their defense a lot because Morant's a pretty poor individual defender. And if you look at the numbers for Memphis this year with Morant off the court, not that this is the end all be all, but you know, they allow like 5.5 less points per 100 possessions when Ja Morant's off the court. So I think this does boost their defense. SGA, somebody else who I'm not really getting to in my initial builds.
I think I'm a little bit higher on SGA just because of Giddey being out. I think that's potentially a big impact for him. We still only saw two assists yesterday, but we got 26 field goal attempts. He has a 35% usage rate without Giddey on the floor this year. I don't really think that continues necessarily, but I also think that it's likely you see a bump in assists for Gilgeous-Alexander without Giddey, because Giddey has the highest assist percentage on the team. Going back to the start of last season without Giddey on the floor, so, you know, obviously all of last year and then this year without Giddey, but 1.22 DraftKings points per minute for SGA, 30% usage rate, 29.5% assist percentage. So the usage up a little bit, but the assist percentage up as well. I do think you get a little bit higher ceiling from him with Giddey out, just because of the fact that Giddey is really cutting the, you know, his peripherals this year.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to look at it. Maybe I do need to adjust the rates for SGA a little bit. Yesterday, he did have a 38.8% usage rate without Giddey on the court. Now, 12 of 26 from the field. He didn't add much in peripheral stats, but yeah, it is true. If he did anything outside of score yesterday, he probably would have crushed, because he had no steals. He had 2 assists, 4 rebounds, and it does stand to reason his assist rate should be higher with Giddey off the court. So I might need to readdress that a little bit. Anything else from OKC that you want to talk about here?
Not really. They actually ran a surprisingly tight rotation yesterday. So I guess that's kind of one thing to mention is you should obviously pay attention to what the rotation looked like yesterday, since it's going to probably be similar to today. But keep in mind that this is a team that typically does run a very deep rotation. It would not be surprising at all if they just did kind of random stuff today and it looks different. So there is some volatility in the minutes for the non-core pieces, but I think, you know, the most likely outcome is that it looks similar to yesterday.
All right. And on the other side of the game, it is the Ja Morant-less Memphis Grizzlies. Kyle Anderson also questionable to play. Zaire Williams, he is doubtful to play. So this kind of condenses a Memphis rotation that's generally pretty deep. And the first thing I need to bring up here, I like Dylan Brooks. He looks really expensive at first glance on DK at 7,000. He's cheaper on FanDuel at 5,800. He's going to be really popular on FanDuel. DK, though, I still like getting to him even at the elevated price point just because of the usage rate. So recent games, these are the usage numbers that Dylan Brooks is putting up. 31.5%, 35.2, 36.7, 38.7, 26.5, his season low, 32.3, 33.8. Dylan Brooks is going to shoot way more than I ever feel like Dylan Brooks should be shooting the basketball. But as long as he's going to be taking this much volume shooting, he's somebody I want exposure to in DFS.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I had a bunch of him the other day. It was disappointing because he ended up playing 33 minutes, which was great. He shot 5 for 18 from the field. That's kind of the issue you run into with Brooks. But the biggest positive as far as an unknown goes from that last game was that he did play 33 minutes. We had seen the minutes be a little bit limited previously, but him getting out there for 33 and a half minutes looks really good. There's no real reason to think he goes backwards going forward. And depending on, you know, depending who else you put on the floor with him, whether like you add Jaren Jackson or whatever, but without Ja Morant on the floor since last year, you're looking at between a 30 and 34% usage rate for Dylan Brooks. Like you said, maybe not the best idea that he goes out there and chucks, but he's going to do it one way or the other. It's not even that he defers to Morant. It's more just Morant doesn't give him the ball enough for him to shoot to shoot 20 times a game. But without Morant out there, he's going to get his shots up. And I think you're right. The price tag is a little bit scary. It's certainly still possible for him to fail. It's not like it's a glaring value, but I think that he's got a legitimate ceiling at that price.
Yeah. So Dylan Brooks, I think relative to public perception, I'm lower on him than most people. But with that said, the reasons I dislike him make me like him in DFS. I just think he plays so far outside of his capabilities to where even Ja Morant was on the court, Dylan Brooks was leading this team in usage. That shouldn't be the case. But we've seen it all season. It's not going to change. And that dates back to the end of last year. He's going to take a lot of shots. A lot of them are going to be bad shots. He's going to be an inefficient scorer. But as long as he's willing, it's going to make him viable in DFS. Now, Jaren Jackson Jr. is somebody who, for what I would like to see, I would love to see some of that Dylan Brooks usage go over to Jaren Jackson Jr. And we've seen an uptick in shots that he's been taking since Ja Morant got hurt. So last three games, 35% usage rate, 29%, 22.2% for Triple J. He's somebody else who I like as an upside play. Now, there's a whole lot of variance with Triple J just because of his potential for fouling, and he is projected for a lot of ownership right now. If this ownership stands, then I'll feel a little bit uncomfortable getting to him where he's at, you know, 30% owned by the field. But he's somebody that I do view as having a massive amount of upside. So where do you stand with Jaren Jackson Jr. for today?
Yeah, same boat for me. And I think his playing time last game was really, and actually I've seen it a couple of times recently, was really appealing, because for a lot of the season, it was kind of like when he doesn't get in foul trouble, he was still only playing 30 minutes for whatever reason. And it made me dislike him a little bit, because it was like, okay, if you avoid the foul trouble, the ceiling is still only coming from him playing really well. You're not getting a bunch of extra minutes. Whereas now he is getting a little bit more run. He played 34 minutes last game. He is likely to see a usage bump without Ja Morant as well, at least to whatever extent Dylan Brooks will let him. But yeah, I'm with you. I think he looks really good. The ownership at 27% is a little bit high because not only are you talking about a volatile player in Jackson, but you just always have alternatives in that price range that give you a similar range of outcomes, even if Jackson looks a little bit better. You know, even for example, he's getting almost double the ownership of Dylan Brooks. If I can only play one and ownership doesn't matter, then I'm going to Jackson. But I don't think he's twice as likely to, you know, be the highest scorer between him and Brooks. And there's going to be plenty of other alternatives as well. You know, those guys on Milwaukee, I mentioned Portis, Middleton, Holiday, all in that price range. There's just a lot of guys where it's kind of a situation where you can just kind of take the field and you're probably going to be right. But, you know, all that said, I think Jackson still looks like a very good option.
And then I want to ask you over on FanDuel, Jaren Jackson Jr., one of the most popular plays on the slate in a crazy kind of way. We currently have him projected for over 40% ownership on FanDuel. So let's say there's a scenario where Jaren Jackson Jr. gets into foul trouble. Somewhat likely. It happens all the time that we see Triple J get into foul trouble. If you're looking at that ownership on FanDuel, is there any particular play you would look at as a potential leverage play in the situation where Jaren Jackson Jr. gets into foul trouble? Who from the Grizzlies would benefit the most, and would you want to play them over on FanDuel because of Jaren Jackson Jr.'s crazy high ownership?
I think it would either be Kyle Anderson or Brandon Clark. Anderson would be the one that I went to first because I feel a little bit more confident in his role anyway. He only played 19 minutes last game. Clark played 16, but Clark only played like 5 minutes, 4 minutes in the first half. We've seen Clark kind of just get jerked around rotation-wise by Jenkins, whereas we know Anderson's at least going to be in the rotation. And then if Jackson were to get in foul trouble, you're probably getting more run for Anderson. So I do think, you know, on FanDuel, you have Jackson at 41%. You have Anderson at 3%. That's the one I would go to first. You can make the same sort of argument for Brandon Clark, but Anderson would be the first one.
All right. Anything else you want to bring up from the Memphis side of the game? If not, we will move on to the next game.
Desmond Bane at 6,400 is kind of a good play for the same reason as Brooks. He was a high usage guy early in the year when Brooks was out. Then Brooks came back and took a lot of that usage away. But now you're taking Ja Morant out. And Desmond Bane has been very, very good at scoring this year and gets a usage bump without Morant. So I think at 6,400, he's another one that looks like a pretty solid option.
All right. Next game we have here, it is the Detroit Pistons against the Phoenix Suns. And on paper, not the most appealing game, at least in terms of a competitive standpoint. However, there is going to be Devin Booker out for the Phoenix Suns. So that's going to create some value on their side of the game. But first, starting with Detroit, tough matchup against the Suns. Suns have one of the better defense in the league. Also, this game is expected to be played at a pretty low pace. Only a 208 total right now, or 209, depending where you look. By far the lowest on the slate. Is there anybody from the Detroit Pistons who really stands out to you? I'm getting to Sadiq Bey again, unfortunately. He keeps popping up for me, and it's going extremely poorly, but I continue to project him well. Do you have any kind of Sadiq Bey takes or anybody else you really like from Detroit?
So one thing quickly, somebody mentioned it in chat and I had missed it. Clark was in massive foul trouble in the first half last game. So that's why he only played 4 minutes. As far as Detroit goes, nothing really stands out. You know, you get a ceiling from guys like Cunningham, Grant, Bay, you know, being less expensive than those other two. And if they are able to hang in this game, it's likely that one of those guys does well, but it's nothing I'm really going out of my way for. I guess I would say that they still fit that criteria where when we were talking about being able to find plenty of high upside guys in Jaren Jackson's price range, for example, Jeremy Grant getting like one third the ownership for $200 more, Cade Cunningham getting like one fourth the ownership. So just two more guys where even though they don't project as well and they're less likely to succeed, you're still able to use them in that price range if you need a contrarian play.
Yeah, over on FanDuel, we've got fairly low ownership on Cade Cunningham, who is only at 6,900. 7,900 for Cade Cunningham going up against Chris Paul and Suns defense. That's a little steep for me. And it's really funny. Cade Cunningham, you know, nobody wanted to play this guy when he was at 4,000 2 weeks ago. Everybody was saying, fade Cunningham, this guy sucks. And now he's, you know, 7,900 just a couple of weeks later. Goes to show how mispriced he was before. But 7,900, is there anything that would push you to get Cade Cunningham into a decent amount of your lineups? I'm just not getting there.
No, it's solely the fact that he's low owned and he's going to play big minutes, assuming he can stay out of foul trouble. And obviously he gets a lot of opportunities with this team, but I think he's at the point where he's correctly priced and you're basically just paying for his ceiling, which is fine. But you know, if you're doing that, it's in It's more so in specific lineups where you have chalkier pieces and then you need to fill it out with someone that has a high ceiling but isn't popular. That's where Cunningham fits in. It's not like I'm looking at Cunningham and saying like, oh man, the field's really missing here. I think there's still a ton of value on this price tag because I don't really think that there is.
All right. On the Sun side of the game. Oh, by the way, I see we have a super chat here from Keys to Facity YouTube. Thank you for the super chat. There's no question in there though. So if you have a question you wanted to ask us, fire that in. I will certainly answer that, but no question right now in the super chat. Looking at the Phoenix Suns now, there's no Devin Booker for the Suns. Looking at some of the numbers for this team when Devin Booker is off the court. Chris Paul, 22.8% usage rate, scores 48.25 DraftKings points per 36 minutes. Cameron Payne stands to see a little bit of a boost. Other than that, there's not any one individual player who we look at who it's like, oh, this guy gets a massive usage bump. Are there any value plays from the Suns that you really look at as being strong plays without Devin Booker?
I think that so a lot will depend on the starting lineup here, but we got Cameron Johnson starting the second half last game. He's not the best, you know, per minute guy, but he's cheap enough that if he's going to get around 30 minutes, he's going to look decent. He did get a little bit of an elevated price tag up to 4,200 on DraftKings, but I think maybe still a little bit of value there. Cameron Payne at 4,100 potentially benefits because we've been seeing him play a little bit more alongside Chris Paul recently anyway, with Abdel Nader out. Now taking out Booker, you didn't really see a positive impact for Payne last game. In the second half, he still only played about 7 minutes or so, but that doesn't have to be the case. You could certainly get a little bit more Payne playing alongside Paul. So I think that throwing some darts at Payne and Johnson makes some sense. Landry Shamet at 3,100 is another guy that could potentially benefit. He did get 24 minutes last game. He's someone that makes sense a little bit. You know, with Booker out, you need more scoring. You need somebody that can shoot from the outside. Landry Shamet can certainly do that. So maybe you see a little bit more run for him. Between those three, there's not anything I'm really confident in that it happens every game. But I do think that there's just minutes and sort of a role to go around for those guys. So pay a lot of attention to ownership there because I don't think that anybody should be super confident in how this rotation is going to play out, because I think a lot of it's going to depend on game flow and who's playing well. But I do think that there's a pretty good chance that you get at least one of Payne, Johnson, and Shamet exceeding their salary.
Yeah. So all three of them I have in the build I made this morning. Cam Payne is the one who I have projected for the most fantasy points, his best points per dollar play. Just looking at the ownership, though, I prefer Cam Johnson to Landry Shamet just because I have Cam Johnson projected a little bit higher. He's also more expensive, but at least as of now, he's projected for half the ownership that Landry Shamet has. And Shamet's just shit as a fantasy producer. You look at his numbers as of late. You know, last game, he ends up playing 24 minutes. He scores 15 fantasy points in those minutes. Now, the price point on a small slate is still going to make it so that he's viable. And certainly in cash games, I think he's a good punt play. But I don't know that Landry Shamet has the kind of upside to win a GPP for the season. He's playing 18.6 minutes per game, 13.3 DraftKings points overall. He scores well under a fantasy point per minute. That's been the case for his entire career. A few years ago when he's with the Clippers, he played 27.4 minutes per game. He averaged 15.25 DraftKings points in those minutes. So I don't know that Shamet has all that much upside. The only reason I would even be considering him at all is because it's a small slate and we need some salary savings. But I assume I'm going to be underweight to the field on him if he ends up being this popular, at least as we currently have him projected.
Yeah, and here's the other thing on Shamet. I agree with everything you said. But also right now, at least, it seems like he's getting maybe a little bit overprojected. We have him at 27 minutes, which I think is reasonable. I've seen him close to 30 elsewhere. That's a possible outcome. I'm not confident at all that that's the median here. He only played 24 minutes last game in the game where Booker got hurt. But, you know, obviously Booker played most of the first half. But even if you look at the second half, Shamet played about like 12 to 13 minutes. So in the second half. So it's just reasonable to think that you could just get 24 to 26 minutes from him here. That's, you know, another way this can go. Elfrid Payton entered the rotation in the second half. He played 4 minutes and 16 seconds. But the point is that if they throw another body into this rotation, Landry Shamet does not have to play a ton of minutes. He certainly could and probably will if he's shooting well. But I think this is an example where it's not just volatility in what does Landry Shamet do from a fantasy standpoint on the floor. I still think there's volatility here in how many minutes does he play, because he can lose minutes to Payne. He can lose minutes to Payton. He can lose minutes to Johnson. They have so many guys that can play multiple positions on this team, Landry Shamet does not have to play 30 minutes or even anything close to it.
Yeah, and then, I'm totally on the same page as you. Of the three guys that are potential cheap plays for the Suns, as the ownership currently stands, Landry Shamet's my least favorite. Cameron Payne, the one I feel best about. Then it would be Cam Johnson for the lower ownership. And then Landry Shamet, I'd get into the line just because of price point and at somebody who I'm likely going to be underweight to the field on. But now let's talk about Chris Paul. He's not been shooting the ball really all that much this year, but have to figure he takes on a little bit bigger of a scoring role without Devin Booker in there. 22.8% usage rate without Booker on the court this year. The matchup against the Detroit Pistons, maybe there's a little bit of a potential for a blowout situation here. We do have the Suns favored by 12 points. But as a whole, how are you viewing Chris Paul without Booker?
I think he looks great. 8,600, he would have been, a reasonable tournament option anyway. And then now with Booker out, you get the potential not only for more productivity, but potentially more playing time too. He'd been playing a little bit more anyway, since they were using Payne alongside him with Nader out. But now, if Payne were to just kind of soak up some of Booker's minutes, there's a good chance that Paul is out there as well. He's at 1.33 DraftKings points per minute without Booker on the floor this year, 22% usage rate, 50% assist percentage. And, you mentioned the blowout risk. There certainly is. The Suns are 12-point favorites, but there's just less risk in rostering the guys on the winning side of a blowout than there is on the losing side, especially when they're not super expensive. It's one thing when you're talking about like a $12,000 player where it's really tough, no matter how efficient they are, it's really tough for them to get there in, let's say, 28 minutes or 30 minutes. At the 8,600, if Chris Paul has a really efficient game and helps blow out Detroit, so he's getting like 1.5 fantasy points per minute instead of 1.3, he can get there in 29, 30 minutes, and it's not really a big deal. So I think Chris Paul looks like one of the best options on the slate.
Yeah, I have Chris Paul, in the initial build I made, I have him in a little over 40% of my lineup. So Chris Paul, I assume I'm going to be, 44% is what I had in my initial build here. So I assume I'm going to be really high on Chris Paul. The numbers on him look much more favorable with Devin Booker off the court. It's been kind of hard to find upside for a lot of them individually in games where they've both been active. That dates back to last year, but take one of them off the court, the other one generally tends to thrive. Any other Suns takes you have here?
DeAndre Ayton looks good. 7,600, certainly a reasonable price tag for him. He's only played 77 minutes without Booker this year, but potentially a little bit more usage to go around, but mostly it's just a spot where I think Ayton would look good regardless. The wings are fine. Crowder at 4,300, Bridges at 5,700, but I think the priorities are Paul, to some extent Ayton, and then to me, playing the ownership game really between Payne, Johnson, and Shamet.
All right. If you guys want access to all of the tools that we have over at Osmo for basically every single DFS sport out there, you can sign up for an Osmo Plus weekly pass for $29.95. That'll get you access to all the tools, and in particular for basketball stuff like player projections, ownership projections, all stuff that is very important for building NBA DFS lineups. Also, if you're new signing up for Osmo Plus, use the promo code NBA Strategy Show. That'll get you 25% off your first week of Osmo Plus. And if you're only interested in playing NBA, we also have specific NBA packages. They are for as low as $4.95 per week for the NBA Weekly Express package. So check out all that. And don't forget, you can use the promo code NBA Strategy Show if you're a first-time user. That'll get you 25% off. All right, final game on the slate here. San Antonio Spurs on the road against Portland. And let's start with the San Antonio side. And I'm just going to ask you this. DeJounte Murray, is he going to keep it up?
I'm a pretty big DeJounte Murray believer.
I've been way too low on him this year. He continues to be chalk, and I keep coming underweight to the field on him. And once again, it looks like he's going to be pretty popular today. Most recent run of ownership, we have DeJounte Murray projected for 25% ownership over on FanDuel. On DraftKings, he's projected for 22% ownership. The build I have right now, I'm kind of, even with the field, a little bit underweight, though. Once again, I've kind of missed the boat on the DeJounte Murray situation. But at 9,800 price tag, do you think he's worth rostering in over 20% of lineups?
So I think this is one that I think it's going to depend. It's really hard for me to answer without building lineups, because when I look at the my initial response is I think he's worth $9,800. He's averaging 1.33 DraftKings points per minute this year. He's a really good rebounder, which helps stabilize his production. He's, a relatively high usage guy. He gets a lot of assists. But whenever someone in that price range is getting 25% ownership, I'm always inclined to go elsewhere just because there's normally a lot of alternatives. Tonight, there's not, though. When you kind of just look at the pricing around them, Damian Lillard is out. John Morant is out. Randall's fine. Vooch is fine. We already talked about both of those guys. Neither one really stands out. And then suddenly you're paying $900 less for Van Vliet. And the only player active that is more expensive than Murray is $2,200 more in Giannis. So I think it's likely that there's just going to be a lot of lineups where it's just like, all right, well, I have 10K or 9,800 or whatever left over. Murray projects better than Randall or Vooch or Van Vliet. There's no real upgrade that I need to make in this lineup, so I'm just putting Murray in. So I think that's one reason the ownership's as high as it is, and it makes me a little bit more willing to get to it than I would be on a normal slate where you just have a 10K guy pulling 25% ownership on a essentially healthy team.
I like Derek White as a little bit of a leverage play. He's only 2% owned on FanDuel compared to 25% for DeJounte Murray right now. On DK, we have Derek White projected for 8% ownership compared to 22% for for DeJounte Murray. White's played really well as of late, and I was really high on him entering the year. He's one of my most rostered players or most drafted players over in best ball on DraftKings this year, just because I looked at how thin the Spurs roster is, and I figured, well, Derek White has to take a big step forward, and he just hadn't at the start of the year. His assist rate was up a little bit, but his efficiency shooting was down a lot. Not that he was super efficient in the past, but it was down in such a way that it was really hard for him to produce fantasy upside. But now in three of the last four games, we've seen him score 38 fantasy points, 44, 42. I think the price for Derek White is going to continue to go up here, particularly at just the 6,300 price point on DK. So Derek White, one of the reasons that I'm not quite as high on DeJounte Murray is I'm still expecting some more of that usage to go to Derek White. So I'm going to be overweight to the field on Derek White. How do you feel about him?
My only concern is what happens to his playing time with McDermott and Vassell coming back, because for a lot of the season, we've seen 30, 31, 32 minutes. Then recently we've gotten 40, 30, 37, 33. But now you're getting both Vassell and McDermott probable. Not that they play the same position, but is that the reason that White's been playing more, or is it just that he's finally playing better and Pop is going to play him 36 minutes a night in competitive games from now until the end of the season? I don't know, but I don't necessarily think it's a coincidence that his playing time ramped up as they started losing guys that are now back. So that's my concern. I still think there's a path to success for him at 6,300, but I also think that, and I agree with you, the just unbelievably bad shooting at the start of the year played a role in his numbers as well. But I also just have trouble because he plays so many of his minutes alongside Murray, and Murray just does everything. You know, it's not like Murray is only going to score and White can get assists. Murray's going to take those too. Murray's going to take the rebounds. Murray just does everything when he's on the floor. So if White goes back to 30 minutes, I don't really like him at 6,300. If he continues to play 36, then I do. I don't really know which is going to be the case. I lean towards him living in that 30 to 32 minute range. But all of that said, he's 8% owned on DraftKings, and so you can't really go wrong by getting him, I don't think.
Yeah, and then for me, the other point too is, you know, it stands to reason if Derek White has a big game, DeJounte Murray probably loses out on some fantasy points. So I like the little bit of leverage I'm getting there. I'm still really bullish on Derek White, and hopefully the minutes continue to stay up for him, also for the sake of my best ball teams. Other side of this game, the Portland Trailblazers. Once again, no Damian Lillard. Norman Powell is listed as questionable. I really like CJ McCollum in general when you're taking Damian Lillard off the court. But am I crazy to think that if Norman Powell plays today, that CJ McCollum is just a little bit overpriced and overowned? I mean, I still project him fine on a points per dollar basis, but 8,500 on DK for him when he's projected for 30% ownership. If Norman Powell plays, that's a little bit too much for me.
I still think it's fine. You know, I think he's still better if, you know, Tony Snell was in the starting lineup instead of Norman Powell. But I still think he's going to just play a ton of minutes and dominate usage. He's been around the 1.05 to 1.1 DraftKings points per minute guy without Lillard over the last couple of seasons, if I remember correctly, trying to pull that up now, but that was from memory. I still think he looks good, but to your point, you know, he's definitely in a price range where there are a lot of alternatives that you can pivot to if the ownership gets out of control. So I don't view it quite so much as him being overpriced. I view it more through the lens of, even if I think he is the best play in that group, it's not by a super wide margin, so I'm at least going to be sensitive to ownership.
Yeah, by the way, CJ McCollum this year with Damian Lillard off the court, 31.5% usage rate, and he scores 1.13 fantasy points per minute, which is good production, but it's not something that I would look at 8,500 and be like, oh, I need to get this guy into 30% of my lineups. So right now in the build I have, CJ McCollum is in my player pool, but I'm underweight to that 30% number of the field. Obviously, that would change a little bit his projection also if Norman Powell is out. But I want to ask you, if Norman Powell ends up playing today, how would you view him as an option with no Damian Lillard?
So, and just to kind of finish up the McCollum thing, six total games since the start of last year that he's played without Lillard, 1.17 DraftKings points per minute, 33.5% usage rate, 27% assist percentage. As far as Powell goes, assuming that he wouldn't be limited, I think he would look good at 5,400. You're probably, you know, going to get low to mid 30s from him. There would be at least a little bit more usage available. And I think he would just look like a solid sort of like, I guess, glue guy, sort of, for lack of a better phrase, just someone that just like you can plug in at a relatively weak small forward position. He's pretty cheap, and then just, you know, move on and get the guys that you're actually excited about.
Yeah. And then one other thing I'll mention, because I think this is a relevant question. Somebody in YouTube chat had asked you, Chris Paul over McCollum and Van Vliet. I would rather roster Chris Paul than CJ McCollum. I have Chris Paul projected for more fantasy points. And I think that's one of the other reasons too, that my current build, I'm underweight to CJ McCollum, is I just prefer Chris Paul. Would you prefer to play Chris? Just taking, if we're just saying, who do you think you'd project to score more fantasy points at the same price? Would it be Chris Paul or CJ McCollum for you? They're projected for similar ownership.
I think McCollum and Paul are very close. I think I would give the slight edge to McCollum just because I feel like I think McCollum is more likely to give you like 38 minutes than Paul is. Paul, you do have, you know, a little, you do have some blowout risk here where he doesn't finish the game out, but also just even if the game's competitive, there's a good chance you're getting 35, 36 minutes from Paul, whereas you get 38 from McCollum. Van Vliet, I think, is likely to play 38 to 40 minutes, but probably not produce at quite the same level. So I do think all three are close. And that kind of goes back to my point on McCollum, where even though I really like him, you should be paying attention to ownership because there's a lot of alternatives. But I think if I'm just like looking at it from a cash perspective, I would really want to get to both of McCollum and Paul. But if I can only get one, I think I would have McCollum slightly ahead of Paul, both of them a little bit ahead of Van Vliet. From a tournament standpoint, though, looking at that ownership, McCollum at 29%, Paul at 27%. I think those are both good. They're both fine. Van Vliet, 12%. So at the very least, it creates a situation where if you have gone to some chalkier value guys and chalkier pieces elsewhere, you can plug Van Vliet in and you're not losing much from a ceiling perspective. You're just losing a little bit in terms of median projection.
All right. Two more popular plays from the Portland Trailblazers, Anthony Simons and Yusuf Nurkic. As for Nurkic, I think the upside is really substantial. I do worry about his minutes a little bit, though. Last game ended up playing 27. He did get into a little bit of foul trouble. I think he's a fine pay-up option. But once again, I don't know that I'm going to be quite with where the field is, depending on what other options open up on the slate. I would look at somebody like DeAndre Ayton as a potential viable pivot off of Yusuf Nurkic. Anthony Simons, though, I kind of just view as a necessary evil on the slate, right around a fantasy point per minute without Damian Lillard on the court. And then also with Simons, he's likely going to play a whole bunch of minutes. He played 36 minutes last game without Damian Lillard. I'm going to find him just a value play. Number one, you have to play in cash games. And then for tournaments, I'm still going to find it difficult to stay away from. Do you agree with me on Simons, and how do you feel about Nurkic's minutes?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you on Simons. I mean, the salary is getting a little bit higher, so you can at least, there's at least like some alternatives there, but it's still a 5-game slate. He still just looks really good. San Antonio's played at a fast pace this year. Simons himself is just a pretty solid player too. It's not like you're talking about some, you know, backup guard that typically doesn't really do anything when he's on the floor. Simons definitely has, you know, some game, and he's still gonna, he's still cheap enough. He looks like a very good value to me. Nurkic, I'm with you. I think he looks like a very good option at 7K. Also, if Powell is out, I think that it kind of just helps to solidify Nurkic's minutes too, because we already have, you know, Nas Little out in addition to Lillard. So I'm not even looking at Nurkic getting a bump necessarily so much because of Lillard being out and usage being there, as we've seen Portland really like to go small this season. But when you take this many, like if you take Powell out and we know Little is out, it just makes it harder for them to run these small lineups, and it makes it more likely that they want Nurkic in there at the end of games. So the minutes become a little bit more stable. So I do think he looks good. But I do, like you were saying, I don't think there's a massive gap in terms of range of outcomes between him and somebody, say, like DeAndre Ayton.
And any of these other guys that you want to talk about, whether it be Robert Covington, Larry Nance Jr., there was not very many minutes available for Larry Nance last game. It was somebody who was pretty popular, seemed like he would potentially stand to benefit a lot. But even with Nurkic in foul trouble, Nance did not really get the playing time, so he's not somebody I'm really going to be looking to get to. But any other cheap value plays here that you like?
Yeah, I mean, Nance ended up playing 25 minutes last game. It just mostly was in the second half. He was kind of limited in the first half. I don't mind getting to, especially if Powell's out, I don't mind getting to a $3,800 Nance. $3,500 Dennis Smith Jr., if Powell is out, I think is reasonable as well. He only played 17 minutes last game, and some of that was garbage time, but there's the potential for him to play a little bit more. Certainly wouldn't be a priority for me, but for example, someone that you know, if everybody's going to play Landry Shamet at 3,100 and I insist on paying down for a not very good value guy, Dennis Smith Jr. is not, his ceiling's not really lower than Shamet's, even though he's going to play fewer minutes. So sort of dart throw type guys. But as far as the guys I'm confident in, McCollum, Nurkic, Powell, if he's in.
All right, guys, that is going to do it for us. Thank you very much for watching. On the way out, do us a favor for the holiday season. Like the video, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Lots more content coming up today. So stick around and check out all that as well.